I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey guys, the tickets are live for our shows in Dallas on March 18th and Austin on March 19th, and they are flying off the shelves like hotcakes. They're not actually on shelves, it's just on the internet. Go get your tickets soon. Everything's bigger in Texas, and these shows are going to be bigger too, and they're the best way to meet all your friends in the Bulwark community. People have such a blast at the shows, hanging out with each other. Yeah, you get to meet us, but it's a lot more fun, I think, to meet each other. It's just always great to be together. These shows are really one of my favorite things to do. I love being there, and I think it's going to be really fun to be in Texas. So we really hope to see you out there. Get your tickets at thebulwark.com/events. That's thebulwark.com/events. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're kicking off our 2026 election coverage in earnest. If you're an election super nerd who wants to go deep on the pre-midterm primaries, you've come to the right place. This week, we're checking in with Republicans in Texas because the Senate race is, I don't know, like a hilarious illustration of the current state of the GOP. Senator John Cornyn is running for a fifth term, and he's been a pretty reliable, if somewhat boring, supporter of Donald Trump's agenda, but he is still fighting for his political life. And it turns out there are some Republicans in Texas who'd rather vote for a corrupt guy with a string of scandals like Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton because he is a fighter, which might sound familiar. There's also a newer candidate who voters think looks great on paper, but they have a lot of questions about him, and his name is Wesley Hunt. We'll be talking about him a little bit. This race is most likely going to a runoff with two of these three guys, but which two is an open question, even to Donald Trump, who says he has endorsed all three candidates. My guest today is Eric Benson, senior writer at Texas Monthly. Eric, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm excited. I love when we get a reporter who is like deep in these races to talk to us, because I just think you guys know so much more than those of us sort of trying to cover it all from the national scene. You've been covering Texas for a long time, everything from national politics to Buckeyes and high school quarterbacks. Is there anything in particular that you think makes Texas like a particularly interesting political state to cover?
It's such a diverse state from the east to the west, from the north to the south. It contains everything. And so if you're down in the Rio Grande Valley, you know, you feel like you're very much in the north of Mexico or in some area sort of between two countries. And then if you're up in the Texas Panhandle, you're in a Great Plains state, basically. And so that's one of the reasons it's fascinating to cover as a reporter. It's also one of the reasons it's challenging to run in as a politician. As Texans would say, it's a nation unto itself. Texas Monthly is the national magazine of Texas. So, you know, you're asking a Texan or an adopted Texan about that. And yeah, it has a lot.
Are you adopted? Are you not from the state?
Oh, no. No, I'm, we'll have to say this really quietly. I grew up in New York City.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, tough.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you say that that's how you sort of think about the state, just because I remember very formatively in my early 20s, in an early job, I had to travel to all the colleges across Texas. And so I remember driving across these like vast expanses, but then also being in these like incredibly funky towns. You know, all the Keep Austin Weird people is so different from the Dallas sprawl, is different from San Antonio. It's just, it is a wild place. And like with H1 having its own metro newspaper, its own sports teams. And, you know, when they say everything's bigger in Texas, I think that when you live outside of Texas, it's very easy to think of Texas as one thing, just a big old red state that's kind of a border state. But yeah, I don't think that people who aren't from there realize the multitudes that it contains, which I guess just for as a political matter, when you think of coverage, is there more going on than meets the eye? Like, are there ways that it's been changing over the years that you've been covering it that make it maybe more interesting than the broader political analysis would give it credit for?
Well, huge changes. I don't know if people haven't been paying attention, but I mean, you look at, you know, South Texas was solidly Democratic territory, and it always was going to be. And that area has probably swung red more than any other part of the country, or virtually any other part of the country. I mean, the suburbs of Dallas and Houston, which were like the rock-ribbed Republican part of the state, now there's still plenty of Republicans, but those are some of the most diverse parts of the state as well. I mean, you drive out to the Dallas suburbs, and of course, these are political issues as well. I mean, you're getting into large Indian populations, you're getting into large Middle Eastern populations, large East Asian populations, and those political groups have different things that they want. And so I think it's totally changing all the time in much the way it is a lot of other places, because it's not just a rural state or just an urban state. You can find a lot of the trends here in a, you know, a fairly short drive from any major city.
Yeah, I remember I wrote an article. I'm trying to remember what it must have been going into 2020, probably, where I wrote an article said that don't mess with Texas, meaning I was sort of telling Democrats, like, guys, let this go. Like, this is not going to happen for you. Stop spending so much money here. Because Democrats have sort of long looked at Texas's diversification and thought, man, maybe the Democrats are going to get here someday. And to your point about actually some of the places that were these Democratic strongholds have been getting redder all the time. And this is part of the broader trends around Hispanics, or much higher percentage of Hispanics voted for Trump, although they're also one of the first groups to sort of abandon him and be frustrated with him, which is something we've chronicled a lot on the show. But do you think that Texas is a kind of place that could become a blue state eventually? Or do you think that is fantastical thinking?
So I came to Texas in June 2013. The cover of Texas Monthly in August 2013 was State Senator Wendy Davis, who had just come off her filibuster of an abortion bill and was about to run against soon-to-be Governor Abbott, and the Castro brothers. And this was like the new great Democratic wave. I think Robert Draper, who I know has been on your show, wrote that story.
Yeah.
And then 4 years later, we had Beto O'Rourke running. I covered that campaign a lot, and it was looking really close to Texas turning blue. And the conversation was, what he would go around and say is, Texas isn't a red state or a blue state, it's a non-voting state. Well, you get to 2020, and a lot of non-voters showed up, and a lot of them voted for Donald Trump, which began to put the whole theory in question. So whatever former President Bush said about fool me once, fool me twice, I think it would be silly to predict at this point that Texas was going to turn blue at least anytime soon, which isn't to say it couldn't happen this year. But
that's a funny joke. Both, that was a good W poll and a good way to, I like that. Funny guy. All right, before we get into how our focus groups talked about the individual candidates, I want to give you a quick flavor for how people are thinking, or in some cases, as we know from these focus groups, not thinking about this race. Every voter you're going to hear today is a Republican from Texas who voted for Donald Trump in 2024. So let's listen.
And I don't know if anyone remembers what the Soviet Politburo was. At one time, it was harder to get kicked out of the Senate than the Soviet Politburo. And I feel like almost any time we have a chance to get rid of a senator, we might take it.
Just like the Epstein files, there's images that you believed about people, and then all of a sudden these names have come out, and the rose-colored glasses have come off. And I feel like the threads go deep. So before I make a decision as to who I want to vote for, I just want to educate myself a little bit more before I vote. Really, there's no one that's standing out that I'm excited about.
I don't want any of these Democratic candidates who, frankly, are terrible and terrify me. I don't want any of them sneaking in, like with a Ken Paxton, who I think, I don't know, this is me. I do not like him. I think he should have been convicted. I have very strong opinions about it. I think his buddies got him out of it. And I worry that if we put him up, that some terrible Democratic candidate, like what's her name from Dallas, I can't even think of right now, would get in. That would be just terrible.
I've kind of had a point with a lot of Republican people. You've been there for a while and you haven't done what you said you were going to do. You've had enough time. And so I'm kind of like, I'm ready for people to move on, especially if you're in your mid 70s.
So I have to take some time to actually dive in and kind of see who else I would vote for. But as far as now, I'm going to be voting for Ted Cruz.
Voting for Ted Cruz. Okay, so Ted Cruz is not actually on the ballot this year. So I think that quote shows you the level of attention some voters are paying to these primaries. So Eric, your profile's headline, because you did a recent profile on Cornyn, was The Last Ride of Big Bad John, which I appreciate because I love me some Jimmy Dean. So one thing I learned from your piece was that Cornyn has been trying for decades to butch himself up for the GOP base. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, you know, Cornyn's elected Senate in 2002. In 2008, which is first re-election, he has this famous video that they play at the Texas Republican Convention, the state Republican Convention, where it's to the music of Jimmy Dean's Big Bad John, and it shows he's wearing a big hat, and they've rewritten the lyrics to kind of be Cornyn-centric. You know, he came to Washington 6 years ago, and he's our guy, and blah, 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 and he wears a 10-gallon hat. And when that ad made its way onto the internet, it got widely mocked. And he actually, I will say, he's done more Big Bad John videos, so he must have not thought of it as some great misstep. But to me, I think it shows one of the central problems Cornyn has always had, which is that being a senator and saying, I go up to Washington and try to be a serious legislator doesn't work very well politically. And so he's always tried to reach for this kind of earthy Texan-ness. And when he does, he often stumbles because it seems to be not, I mean, he says he's a duck hunter. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he goes out, but he struggles to come across as a man of the people, I would say.
I think the kids would call it cringe.
Sure would.
And yeah. And I do think his inability to maybe take in that feedback and change is maybe a little bit part of his problem. And if there was one thing that these voters knew about John Cornyn, or like how they saw him, it was like as a quite a mild person. I don't know that the Big Bad John vibes were radiating off of him. Let's listen.
He just seems like he's just been there forever. And like someone mentioned, it seems like, yeah, we should have, I mean, he just seems kind of non-influential to me, just kind of a placeholder, if you will, for, I mentioned our trip to Washington. I reached out to John Cornyn's office and Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz's offices did respond and even like invited me to this stuff, and not a chirp from Cornyn. So he's just kind of a placeholder there. I mean, he votes and looks nice and does his job and is professional. No complaints, just would love more action from him.
He's not the most conservative guy. Supported some gun regulations that, you know, been, you know, a little more establishment.
I had some pretty rigid ideas at different points, and I would just vote, oh, you know, Republican, this person. But I started finding out that people who I thought were had a pretty, you know, strong position on something actually didn't. So him, it sounds like some folks say, oh, he was really backing Trump at one point, and then he would vote on issues that were the opposite. And because with Trump's prior administration, the 2016, he had so many people who were not allies with him that really worked against him, fought against him on every level. And it just made me really kind of reconsider.
I would say that John Cornyn is just not cooperating enough. I think he's a rhino, frankly. And what I want is a replacement for him. And while other candidates may indeed be better than Ken Paxton, I think logically what we need to do is vote for whoever can win that can actually probably do a decent job.
I've heard over the last year or two that Cornyn is a rhino, and no one has specifically pointed out a particular vote that he's gone against the Trump administration this time or, you know, 4 years, 5 years ago. And I wonder, because his personality is such, like, he has a little brother personality where he just hangs on. He's a hanger-on. And I think those kind of personalities are easy to bulldoze.
Cornyn's been in there, I think, three terms now. And I guess one of my problems with him is that, you know, being one of the two senators from probably in anyone's short list, is one of the top five most important states in America. I just think it needs to be a really important figure. And I just don't know really anything that Cornyn has really accomplished while being senator in that position. Whereas I feel Ted Cruz has, and whether you like him or not, I mean, he's a powerful figure.
So one thing you wrote is that Cornyn would give an enthusiastic paragraph about working to incentivize semiconductor manufacturing in the United States. And so given how these voters are talking about him, which is like, this guy's kind of a follower, he's a rhino, he doesn't support Trump, how is he pitching himself to the Republican base this time around? Like, I know he's trying to kind of butch himself up, but is he aware of how far apart his demeanor is from the GOP base of now?
Yes, I think he is. Okay. I think he is. I think, unfortunately, he's running a campaign where he has to run away from all of his strengths, which is why this has been a very tough campaign. If John Cornyn were to run a campaign on his strengths, he would cite some of the things that I do in my piece. He would say, go to the Center for Legislative Effectiveness and ask them how I am. Well, I pass 10 times as many laws as any other, you know, as the average Republican senator. I've been Senate Republican whip. I've raised $400 million for my party. I've had every leadership position in the Senate other than being leader. And if three senators had changed their vote in the December of 2024, I would have been Senate Majority Leader too. And I've put through all of these laws and I've made this country work better and I've gotten more money for Texas. But instead, that line doesn't appeal to people who think that essentially the federal government is, outside of what Donald Trump says, is corrupt and venal and not working for them. And so he can't talk about his accomplishments as a U.S. senator. And instead, he has to kind of do a bit of a race to the bottom with the other candidates. So he has to air anti-Sharia law advertisements. He has to say that Wesley Hunt and Ken Paxton aren't real conservatives. Now, these aren't things that John Cornyn is spending a lot of time saying himself, but this is what the campaign messaging that's going out is. And so they are playing to a Republican base that does not want to hear the things that John Cornyn, I think, probably really does want to tell them about why they should reelect him.
Is Sharia law coming to Texas?
Doesn't seem that way to me. But it does, I think, seem that way to a lot of Texans.
Where did they get that idea?
You know, 10 years ago, this was also a concern. This is something that gets brought back up. And, you know, I think it taps into fears people have about our changing country.
I have heard this in lots of focus groups. Like, sure, the Sharia law does sort of pop up and around from time to time. But even before, when it was coming up, it was sort of directly linked to there being specific Muslim communities that were like densely populated in certain places. Like, this happened in Michigan. But like, is that happening in Texas? Like, is it rooted in anything, or is it?
Yes, there are, you know, I think there's been a whole controversy over a development in Irving, which is not far from here in Dallas, a kind of Muslim, you know, cultural development that Ken Paxton has sued, I think, multiple times at this point. So there's a not insignificant Muslim population in Texas, particularly in the Dallas and Houston areas. So it's not that there are no Muslims. I'm not sure how you get from there being a Muslim immigrant community that is largely professionals, you know, is a kind of right, a well-educated community here, how you get from that to fears of Sharia law. But
well, you know, you got to run ads about something, I guess, and God forbid it be about affordability and other things. This show is sponsored by Tempo Meals. During the week, my schedule is nonstop. Meetings, late nights working on a secret project, and healthy eating is usually the first thing to slip. Tempo keeps me grounded with real meals that I can heat in 2 minutes so I don't default to snacks or takeout. Tempo delivers fresh, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals right to your door. Each meal is perfectly portioned for lunch or dinner and is ready in just 2 minutes. That means real food, real fast. The salmon dishes are a hit with my staff who are trying to cram themselves full of omega-3s. Everyone's getting in shape for the 2026 elections. With 20 new recipes every week made from nutrient-rich ingredients, Tempo keeps things exciting and helps you stay consistent with healthy habits. Even busy athletes like Maria Sharapova swear by Tempo for balanced meals that help them stay on top of their wellness goals. For a limited time, Tempo is offering my listeners 60% off your first box. Go to tempomeals.com/thefocusgroup. That's tempomeals.com/thefocusgroup for 60% off your first box. tempomeals.com/thefocusgroup. Man, that's a good deal. Rules and restrictions may apply. But I want to talk about Ken Paxton, because if Cornyn is the mild-mannered, serious legislator that people do not appreciate because they no longer appreciate people who try to do serious legislation, Ken Paxton, although he is the sitting Attorney General of Texas, he's about as scandal-plagued as anybody else in the GOP. I haven't followed it like so closely, but lots of like adultery and like, and for a guy who, and I think it's like a real hypocrisy kind of thing, like a very Christian, holds himself out to be pro-family and then has all these kind of skeletons in his closet, but also a lot of corruption, was already indicted by his colleagues, but then was let off the hook, as that one guy was saying. As I look at what's happening to the Republican Party, he is somebody who sort of stands out as a person who can thrive. To the extent that Cornyn's now liabilities used to be pluses, things that used to be liabilities like these scandals are now things that actually help Ken Paxton thrive. So let's listen to how the voters talk about him.
I think Ken Paxton is a slimy snake and I will not vote for him.
If our political purity test is didn't cheat on your wife, but we don't support Trump, that's going to be a tough position to defend, I feel.
I'm pretty confident that I'll vote for John Cornyn. Ken Paxton has a long history of integrity issues, and that concerns me because when push comes to shove, I want to be able to trust the person that's in office.
I have just started looking into, you know, the voting, because early voting's starting and I'm normally in the early voting. Me and my mother-in-law actually decide together who we're going to vote for, because me, my husband, and my mother-in-law all go vote together. And we had initially decided on Ken Paxton because just of what we've seen about him and what he wants to do. But I honestly did not know about these, I guess, scandals that he has around him.
I'm pretty convinced I'm going to vote for Ken Paxton. I understand what was saying. But, you know, that's the nature of all politics, all politicians, really. They're going to tell you what you want to hear, so you'll vote for them and then proceed to do whatever they want to in the first place once they get into office. Now, my rationale for Ken Paxton is, you know, off and on, I've kept track of what he's doing so far in his current position.
If I was voting on deacons for our church, definitely Ken Paxton wouldn't be part of it. Would not have my vote. But my understanding, I don't remember, because it's been about a year ago, his political trials were kind of brought to an end, I thought, a conclusion. And I thought he took some sort of a plea that just kind of settled things because they couldn't prove whatever the graft or whatever it was. I'm not voting for his pious character. I would be voting for whether politically I thought he would represent us. And that sounds kind of a sad state of affairs. I'm a Christian, and I absolutely believe that we are responsible for our lives and whether we sin or not. But I think if we looked at any place in the Senate, who's going with who, that's just not my business.
There are plenty of good, solid Republican red votes out there, politicians. They don't come with as much as baggage as a Paxton. So until someone shows me something that Cornyn has said or done that has been, you know, anti-Republican, anti-conservative, I think I'm going to stick with him.
I've also seen where Ken Paxton has some issues with integrity lawsuits and, you know, maybe not being right with his wife and, you know, having extramarital things. Right now, I honestly don't know.
I mean, he was convicted. He had an affair and there was this money embezzlement. I mean, there's been like, I don't even know how he's allowed to run. I don't disagree with his politics at all. In fact, I like his politics, but he has had such missteps in his personal integrity that make it hard for me, even though I agree with him politically, for me to pick him because he's, you know, there's just, and it was in our local news media and he actually went to my church where I go and to church. And so I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the, you know, the details that it's hard to get past that personal indiscretion, but be the face of public integrity. So I do worry about that a little bit.
I think that he is somebody who will do what he says he's going to do, but some of the things like the scandals concern me a little bit. And he's been around also and had his time.
So one of the best vignettes in your piece was when John Cornyn got brutally booed at the Texas GOP convention as he was pushing the Safer Communities Act. And the crowd there went crazy for Ken Paxton as soon as Cornyn left the stage. I don't know if I think that they're shy Paxton voters, but like people are aware that he has baggage, but they also like his politics better. And I know from listening to voters this long that like in a group of people, they will pay homage or lip service to the fact that the person is not a good person exactly, but you can tell that this is the guy that they want. Like I said before, I know that he has like these adultery things and he was overwhelmingly impeached by a Republican state house, but then not removed by the Senate. You said in your piece, he's both scandal plagued, but kind of boring as well, which I think is interesting. Can you just talk more about what these scandals are besides, I think people understand the adultery piece, but how has he turned all of his personal sort of personal baggage and legal troubles into an asset in this Republican primary?
Yeah, I mean, with all due respect to Angela Paxton, I mean, the adultery, I think, is the least of the issues here. So Ken Paxton gets into office, or before he gets in, when he's running for attorney general, the first of the sort of scandals breaks, which is that when he was a lawyer, so state representative is a part-time job in Texas. So back when Ken Paxton was a state representative representing McKinney in the Dallas suburbs, he was also a private lawyer. And he had steered some of his clients toward an investment firm, which turned out to be an investment firm that would be accused of fraud and was not a great place to probably have your money. At least it wasn't for a few of these people. And these people, what they said is that they thought Ken Paxton was just doing this out of a kind of professional responsibility. He was actually working for the firm. He was taking a 30% cut of their asset management fees. So he got into trouble for this. He then got into more trouble for this when it turned out this behavior hadn't been isolated to that one company, but there'd been other investments he'd been kind of steering people toward without the proper disclosures. And that was when Ken Paxton got into office in 2015 after he was sworn in. You know, I remember there was kind of widespread belief that Ken Paxton was done, that he was going to resign. He was going to be forced to resign fairly quickly. Republicans on the state level were not coming to Ken Paxton's defense. He was really kind of out there on his own. But he gave the conservative base and has for his entire time what they want, which is he has used the attorney general's office to basically telegraph his values and the values of what would become MAGA Republicans. And he does that through lawsuits. The lawsuits don't always and often don't go anywhere. But when you sue someone, it's a headline. When the case resolves down the line, you know, 5 years later in court, no one's really cares about that or writes about it. So he's done things during this campaign. He's done things like, not long after Charlie Kirk's killing, Paxton put out a press release saying that he, the Attorney General's Office of Texas, was going to be doing an undercover operation in left-wing terrorist cells across the state. Now, the Attorney General's Office of Texas does not have a very large law enforcement purview, the Department of Public Safety, which is our state police. That's separate from the Attorney General's office. And Ken Paxton certainly isn't managing counterterrorism at the FBI. And so what's happened to that operation? Well, probably nothing. Because, you know, and I talked to people who were very involved in law enforcement at the Attorney General's office and had been. And they said, but this is not what we do. But when I went to a Ken Paxton rally the night that he announced that, people were really excited, or at least a few of them were. Wow. This is the kind of thing that Ken Paxton does for Texas. So he has had these financial scandals. He was impeached for his scandal that was basically that he had, on behalf of a Austin real estate developer who himself would be indicted and end up pleading guilty to felonies, he essentially used the Attorney General's office to do this guy favors. And Paxton's own attorneys, who were very conservative, religious conservatives, people who were really the second wave of Paxton deputies, because the first wave was people like Chip Roy, who's now running for attorney general in Texas and, you know, has a long political history. They left pretty quickly when Ken Paxton came in. So this was a group of people that he essentially said, you're the people who are part of my conservative program. And those people went to the FBI and said, this guy is doing things he shouldn't be doing. And that's what led to the impeachment by a Republican House. He didn't get convicted in the Senate, but he has done a very good job at wrapping himself. If there is a cause that is burbling up somewhere in the Republican base, Ken Paxton will jump on it. As soon as they had that, Robert Kennedy and Trump had that press conference about Tylenol, Ken Paxton sued the makers of Tylenol. He's like, he is on point. He is giving people what they want.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Actually, the story you just told is a pretty good microcosm of the clash between kind of the old Republican Party that, for whatever you thought about it, was like, I'm not going to go near this corrupt stuff. Like, I'm out of here. To the new Republican Party, which is like, give me the corrupt stuff. Like, as long as it's done in service of MAGA, as long as it's being used efficiently against our enemies, like, I'm down and I'm in. And this is where, like, the scandals of Ken Paxton, and somebody even said it in the group, they're like, well, we all love Trump, right? So the fidelity to the wife, like, who cares? I mean, and I'll tell you what, Donald Trump has made any of that a real dead letter. Like, no one cares anymore because they understand that voting for Donald Trump meant that this part of sort of the character counts narrative, anything about morality, all that stuff was over. And now, and this is a pretty familiar pattern too, which is it goes from like, this thing was bad to, hey, what about, you know, Bill Clinton and so-and-so, to, no, this vice is good, actually, which is what Ken Paxton really leans into, is, no, Donald Trump is corrupt in this exact same way. I will be corrupt in this way. And the interesting thing about Cornyn getting booed is that people really do view doing the normal job of a politician as anathema to the job they want them to do now. What do you make of that in terms of the story that it tells about just where our politics is headed?
Yeah.
So, big sigh. I know. That's a bummer of a question.
No, I mean, it's interesting thinking about how anyone ever evaluated a U.S. senator, how voters who are not super plugged into the goings-on of Congress evaluated a U.S. senator. Because you've heard everyone in your focus group, I don't think there's a single person who, when they were talking about John Cornyn or Ted Cruz, cited a single piece of legislation. There was an idea of the guns stuff, which really, absent Cornyn's leadership role in the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, I think he would have been harder to primary. Now, people have talked about primarying Cornyn from the right basically since Cornyn's been in office. So it's not as if John Cornyn was beloved by the Tea Party to MAGA wing of the party always and just did this gun thing and then they all turned on him. It's always been a problem. But yeah, how do you evaluate it? And when people said John Cornyn isn't powerful in the focus group, he's just kind of there. Ted Cruz is powerful. I think what they mean is Ted Cruz is better at media. That Ted Cruz is better at getting his voice out there.
He's got a podcast.
Yeah. You know, John Cornyn is not as good as Ted Cruz at the internet. He's not as good as Ted Cruz at getting up in sound bites. And so I think that's kind of what people are looking for. They're looking for, as you've said, you know, a fighter. And it is hard for John Cornyn to convince people that he's a fighter. And he actually admits that. He has the temperament of a lawyer and a judge. When I've talked with him, I don't look at my opponents as my enemies. Well, boy, that's not such a 2026 message that's going to grab the political base. My opponents are not enemies. They deserve respect. I mean, that's the kind of thing people said 40 years ago, and it maybe played well, but it doesn't play so well now.
Oh, they could have said it 16 years ago, and it might have done okay. It really is the last decade that we've all decided. I mean, because the voters do. I mean, compromise is a dirty word now, as opposed to, this is actually when people are like, what's the worst thing that you've learned from the focus groups? I often cite, it is that people want outcomes from government. They want it to deliver things. Those are things, the mechanism by which those things are delivered is compromise. And yet they do not want compromise. They see compromise as weakness. And in a way that you would have not that long ago, I think said, well, I'm somebody who reaches across the aisle. I know how to work to get things done. Voters reject that now as a just way of doing politics, which means there's no way to get them the things that they want delivered by the government without just ignoring of the other side or running over of the other side, sort of a like what Trump is doing, right? Which is to basically say Congress doesn't exist, to throw away the whole entire system of checks and balances. And so I find that to be one of the most perplexing, because there's not an incentive structure for compromise if the voters don't want it. And if they don't see that as the mechanism by which they are delivered the things that they want.
Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The wild card in this race is this Congressman Wesley Hunt. He's a younger Black congressman from the Houston suburbs. And according to the polling average at the moment, he looks like the least likely of these three candidates to make it to the runoff. But there's actually polling that shows that if he does, he might be the favorite over either Cornyn or Paxton. This is an interesting function of a runoff with three candidates where if those two have the most name ID, but if he were to sneak in somewhere, suddenly he'd be very competitive because the other two are polarizing in these various ways we've just heard. So let's listen to how these voters talk about Hunt.
I saw something the other day about Wesley Hunt. I thought he was just, you know, pro-patriotic and all these, but they were saying he voted at different times with AOC. and that to be careful. So you never know, you know, with smear campaigns, what's true or not.
I'm not too terribly concerned if you voted on some of the same issues as AOC or some other people, because there's a lot that gets voted on that gets 75, 80, 90 plus percent of the vote in the House. I think that's more of a talking point to get people to think that they're on the same side.
I heard him talking before. The hearing was on ID. I guess it was national ID, voter ID. And he was just so down to earth. He pulled out six of his IDs and says, don't tell me that as a Black person that I can't get an ID. And he pulled out his Texas right to carry card, and he pulled out his Texas driver's license and a passport and several other documents. And just hearing him talk in that forum just made me think he's got right conservative values. And something as simple as an ID before you vote. I heard him speak, I think he was in Amarillo. All I remember is I think he was talking to a church there, and I thought, oh, that's nice, he's talking to a church, which, you know, is neither here nor there. But I liked the appearance of his values. They seemed conservative to me.
Now, Wesley Hunt, the only thing that's really holding me back on him is he did not vote for Donald Trump. And so that bothers me about Wesley Hunt. I'm kind of hard to please, though, but he didn't vote for Trump. So that makes me wonder, like, is he really aligned?
I was actually interested in Wesley Hunt because I had read where Trump was backing him. However, over the last 2 weeks, I've seen a lot of information where Wesley Hunt didn't show up to vote for 90% of the votes. I have a real problem with that because I want someone that's going to go in there and work. And if you're not showing up for the votes, then it don't matter. You're not doing your job.
So you interviewed Wesley Hunt recently, and he said he thinks it's fine if Ken Paxton is a U.S. senator. He's not worried about being a spoiler for Cornyn, because that's, I think, some of the charge against him. How is he handled attacking Paxton differently than Cornyn has? And how has he morphed since he got into politics in the 2020 cycle? Does he have an answer to, like, not voting for Trump or missing all the votes? Tell us about him.
Yeah, so he is a Houston area congressman, ran in 2020 and lost. And then his district was kind of redrawn. They sort of drew a district that was quite favorable for Wesley Hunt. He was someone I had heard about for a few years at that point. Someone who I think at the time was viewed as a more moderate Republican. The person I heard about him from was former Congressman Will Hurd, who was definitely a more moderate Republican and ran for president, didn't make much headway there, and is not in politics anymore, at least not in Congress. But once Wesley Hunt got in office, I think he saw the way or before, when he ran in 2022, you know, he saw the way the wind was blowing. Whether it's been an eye-opening for him philosophically, or he's been very smart politically, but he has really lashed himself to Trump. And that's, I think, as far as I understand it, that's the campaign. You know, the campaign is that he's not Ken Paxton or John Cornyn, and he's a MAGA true believer. And there is a small chance that that's actually going to be enough. I think a lot of people were upset when he got into the race, not the least of which were Texas Republican donors, who at that point said, man, we're not only going to have to pay for a primary, we're going to have to pay for a runoff too.
Yeah.
We had one race to fund and now we got two. So I know that there was some upset there, but I thought it was a pretty smart political move on his part, assuming that his dream was not to be in the United States House of Representatives for the next 30 years, because he will lose his seat if he doesn't get this. But as you've heard in the focus group, there are not that many people who support John Cornyn or Ken Paxton without reservation.
Right.
People who support Ken Paxton say, he's a fighter, I like that, and maybe it's not all true, but there aren't that many people who I've spoken with, at least, who say everything about Ken Paxton is a total lie. He's the most persecuted against person in the world. Ken Paxton almost doesn't say that. He'll kind of allude to some personal you know, issues he's had. And then John Cornyn, yeah, people, even people who support him, you know, in the Republican primary, there's not a lot of full-throated, passionate support of John Cornyn, which is a problem John Cornyn's always had. There are not that many passionate John Cornyn supporters because he himself does not issue forth a lot of passion. And so, yeah, Hunt getting into the race, that if he makes it, yeah, the polling's been way, way all over the place with regard to Hunt. Boy, if you look on Polymarket, the Wesley Hunt odds are, whew, you know, some either someone's manipulating the market and making a lot of money, or people are really changing their minds quickly because his odds are fluctuate quite a lot. So he will probably not make it because it's an uphill battle and he has less money and he has less name recognition. But I think he's more of a real threat than probably either campaign gave him at the beginning.
So tell me where you think this is all headed now. Like, you've heard with these voters and you got to watch, you know, you watched all the groups that we did in full. Where do you think this is going to go? You think it's going to go to a runoff between Paxton and Cornyn, and then what happens? Or do you think it'll go to a runoff between those two?
It'll definitely go to a runoff. There's no way it's not going to go to a runoff. Yeah, I mean, there's just, it's impossible. I mean, it's, early voting started today, so we're in early voting territory. Ken Paxton is going to make the runoff. I don't think there's any way he's not going to make the runoff. If Ken Paxton makes the runoff against Cornyn, you know, recent Texas history shows that in Republican primaries, when there's a runoff, the more activist approved, I'm not even going to say more conservative, but whatever, the more kind of activist approved candidate wins, because those are the voters who are more passionate, and they're going to show up. So if it comes down to Paxton versus Cornyn, absent some wild game changer, the consensus is that Paxton would win and probably win by a lot. If Hunt gets in, I think it's just anybody's guess.
Yeah, that's interesting. I love a wild card.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Let me ask you this. I see a lot of comments to this effect. A lot of people ask me this when I talk to them. They're sort of just like, I don't understand. And you heard it in the groups, a lot of Christians in Texas, a lot of Christians in the Republican Party. And people do not understand how sort of the self-avowed Christians can vote for a guy like Ken Paxton. And the thing about Ken Paxton is, it's not, to your point, it's not, a lot of times the very Christian are also kind of the activist base of the Republican Party. There's a decent overlap, and people always wonder, how is it possible that people whose Christianity is so central to who they are find themselves drawn to candidates like Donald Trump and Ken Paxton? And since you're there in Texas, what do you think?
I think there's a big difference between Donald Trump and Ken Paxton in this regard, which is Ken Paxton himself is an evangelical Christian who talks about God and Jesus on the stump all the time. And so voters who are even conservative evangelical voters, Ken Paxton knows how to speak that language and he speaks it fluently. I went to a Paxton event, I went to a Cornyn event, and the Paxton event was at a Turning Point USA event, so it was kind of a Christian event. So it's not surprising that he would do more Bible talk, but that's what he did. He talked about Jesus. He talked about Charlie Kirk and compared his life and death to the life and death of Jesus. He talked about himself and compared his political struggles to those of Joseph in the Old Testament, and, you know, being turned on by his brothers and then coming to sit in their judgment. John Cornyn doesn't do that. I haven't heard John Cornyn speak at a church, but I heard John Cornyn speak at an event where there was a prayer before John Cornyn spoke, and he doesn't speak that language. Is there hypocrisy in someone who wraps themselves in the church and the Bible, who then is facing their second allegation of infidelity, who's being divorced by their wife for quote unquote biblical reasons, you know, who has been involved in a lot of business dealings that have, you know, that he's at this point kind of settled, and that person on the focus group was right. All of the cases against Ken Paxton have been resolved. He didn't go to jail for any of them. He was not convicted of wrongdoing, but there's a long history here, but he speaks that language. So I think people, even if they don't like the actions, they hear the words that he's saying, the way he's wrapping himself in a kind of martyrdom, and they can get behind that.
Yeah. I think that is hard for people to understand sometimes, how much, you know, when churches sort of make a King David defense around Trump, that it rolls off like sort of non-Christians or people who are not sort of steeped in that language don't really notice it, but it is a strong signifier to Christians that Donald Trump is a biblical figure of his own, and how much the language matters, because it becomes sort of in-group, out-group language, and the individual acts sort of matter less than being in the in-group to begin with. It's interesting to me that Trump declined to endorse. And do you think if it goes to a runoff, A, he will? B, do you think if he did, it would decide who was elected in Texas?
I think if Trump had endorsed 6 to 8 months ago, it would have been decisive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what would happen if Trump endorsed now. The way that I think about it is, I don't think Trump is going to endorse. I guess unless he endorsed Wesley Hunt. So basically, if Trump were to endorse Cornyn, and Cornyn were to lose to Paxton, which would be very, very possible, Donald Trump would look weak. And Donald Trump doesn't want to look weak.
Right.
If Donald Trump endorsed Ken Paxton won, and then somehow Ken Paxton lost to James Tallarico in the general election, Trump would look stupid. And Trump doesn't want to look stupid. I think Trump would probably rather look stupid than weak, but I think he would rather not endorse and avoid both of those things. So I would bet he'll let it settle, and then he'll endorse whoever makes it out of the primary process.
Yeah. We are going to do a whole separate episode on the Democratic primary between James Tallarico and Jasmine Crockett. But before we do that, I guess I'm just, since you invoked his name, what do you make of the Democratic primary, and what do you think is going to happen there?
You know, it seems so wrapped up in the larger conversation Democrats have been having nationally about what they represent and whether the best way to oppose Donald Trump and take back power is to find kind of electable centrist candidates, or whether it's to, you know, fire up the base. I guess this has been a discussion for a long time, but I'm hearing a lot of it now. And what I think has been interesting is there have been voices in this election on the left who have been kind of endorsing James Tallarico with the rationale he could get elected and it's better we get people elected. So you had that blow up with the comedian Bowen Yang and his podcast where they said, don't give your money to Jasmine Crockett. I don't know if those guys would have been sort of tacitly endorsing James Tallarico 4 years ago. I think they probably wouldn't have been, especially in the summer of 2020.
Sure.
I think there would have been a lot more pressure on them to endorse the more left candidate. But hey, Jasmine Crockett was up in the last poll by a significant margin. The polls again have been all over. I think these primaries, state primaries, are just really hard to get a representative group for.
I think that's true. I think the polling in these primaries is really tough. I do think the head-to-heads have been pretty interesting. And I guess I'll probably use this as my last question because it kind of brings us back to the Republicans, right? The electability question is a big one right now on both sides, right? The reason that I think people are really giving Tallarico a look, even though I think Jasmine Crockett is probably spiritually where a lot of people want to be right now, is they think, hey man, I saw a bunch of polling that shows that James Tallarico could beat Ken Paxton in a general election. And I am one of those people who thinks if there is a chance, if we are in a year where there is any chance that a Democrat could get elected in Texas, that James Tallarico is a much better bet for that against Ken Paxton than Jasmine Crockett, in part because of the conversation we were just having around some of the Christian conversation. Not that I think a lot of these fervent sort of Christian MAGA overlapping types go to Tallarico, but I do think, and you did hear a little bit of this in the groups, people sometimes underestimate how much the Republicans desperately want Jasmine Crockett, not just because they think they can beat her, but also because they think it turns out their people in a way that Tallarico might just leave some of the people who are like, eh, I'm just not as fired up about it, to go, you know, vote against a Black woman who has frequently gone after Donald Trump or Governor Abbott, for that matter. Tallarico just doesn't bring some of that same baggage. Do you think, though, that this could be a year that a Democrat could win in Texas if sort of the stars aligned and it was against Ken Paxton with his baggage, with sort of the swingier voters in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, never say never. And certainly the scenario you could see would be that the Tallarico Paxton would seem the most plausible way for the Democrats to take that seat. I mean, one thing that's interesting is when I talk to kind of national level Republicans, the thing that freaks them out about Ken Paxton winning the primary is not so much Senator Ken Paxton. It's this would become a very competitive race and we would have to spend so much money on it. And we would still probably win, but spending that much money would siphon off money from Alaska and Maine and North Carolina, and then we might lose those races. And so there's this kind of tactical game and tactical concern. And it's more how they see that race being quite competitive if Paxton were to win. And I think probably if Tallarico were to win too. I was talking to a lot of these people actually before Jasmine Crockett got in the race, because she got in on the last day possible.
Yes. To the great frustration of many Democrats and to the glee of many Republicans who were helping to bolster her jumping in. Okay, Eric Benson, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We're going to be back next week. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube, and become a Bulwark Plus member at thebulwark.com. We will see you guys next week.